From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 23rd day of April, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. I'll take you through the agricultural news for the day. We'll get a quick update on renewable diesel from Scott Irwin and some comments he made earlier in the year. And we'll also check the weather forecast, not only here in the United States, but we'll detail the driest areas of Brazil and how much of the crop is raised in each of those areas. We'll do that with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. And it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn finished at 655 and a half on a Friday, up 5. July a penny higher at 632 and a half, and December at 550 and three quarters, down 2.5 cents. May bean 6.5 higher at 1539 and three quarters. July up 1 3/4. November up 3 1/4. They finished at 1341 and a half. And July wheat a penny and three quarters higher at $7.12 1/4. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby contract 47 and a half cents lower. Feeders were up a buck 60 for the day. Mike Zuzulo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us. Hi, Michael. Thank you for being here on a Friday.
Great Friday to be with you, Todd.
Well, let's talk about the marketplace. I was wondering about yesterday's limit move, especially in those two front months, the May and July, and the idea that there wasn't really very much follow through. And I'm wondering whether that means the market is already priced in the bulk of the issues that it believes could take place in the South American crop?
Yeah, a couple ways to answer that. I think the Friday close being above the Thursday limit move high close of 650 and a half in May corn gives you a continued momentum push to the upside. I think we're hit the pause button to a lesser degree going into Friday's close because the weather did see a shift south of some of the heaviest rains early in the week next week. In other words, the weekend early next week looks a bit drier for the central and eastern corn belt. And so I think between that and the Monday crop conditions report, I think the trade's playing this very, very wise. Why wouldn't they put more risk premium into the market? I think goes to your point. They feel satisfied with what they've done because at my price model, Todd, we're looking at over 650 lead month corn. When you get over 650, in the last 15 or 20 years, you're starting to see a trade probably go at or below a billion bushel carryover for old crop corn. And this is really interesting because not only did the weekly export sales convey and confirm for a second week in a row export demand rationing, because accumulated exports of corn right now are only at 58% of USDA's total projection, and we just crossed week 33. Secondly, we heard that maybe Smithfield was going to be bringing in Argentine corn into the Wilmington bulk in the not too distant future, and that kind of kicked off Friday's trade and why we were probably weaker to begin the day off today with. So I think we really have to balance this demand rationing mindset with this latest week being almost completely U.S. weather driven, freeze in the early part of the week, and very heavy rains expected in next week.
Given that, soybeans still showed strength again today.
Yeah, we came back around. You noticed what happened in the bean corn ratio was it just got pummeled on Thursday. Between Monday through Thursday, we got down to some multi-month lows. We got close to a major low of 2.37 by Thursday's close. And I think what the trade started to see on Friday was this bean oil's not giving up. There's more plants coming online with biodiesel. They're embracing the green energy buy signal that the soybean oil is starting to give in the real world. And I think that all those things together brought back the spreads and saw some liquidation of corn bean spreading. Again, could be very short term depending on this water and how much rain falls, because I'm already starting to hear whispers from clients that they don't want to go from cold, wet corn planting to a drought in the middle of summer, and they may switch some uncertain acreage into soybeans away from corn, and that may start happening as early as next week, I suspect.
Yeah, and price of fertilizer, of course, has kept soybeans more profitable than corn, even with corn at a higher price. This, according to the Farm Doc Daily article written earlier in the week. We'll hear more about that in just a minute from Gary Schnitke. And I'm wondering, in that case, what producers should think about as it relates to pricing out new crop corn and soybeans. Is there an opportunity on one and not on the other? Or on neither or both?
Well, I think there's pricing on both. And I think you bring up a good point about the corn versus the beans. If you do 225 corn yield and you can get a 520 cash price, you're clocking in at almost $1,200 an acre. If you can get a 70 bushel bean yield at, you know, 13, what would be probably $13 even at this point, you're clocking in at over $900 an acre. And so beans are keeping up very well with corn, given the cost of production. I am in the exact same boat I was a week ago, because when I look back at this week, it's almost a near repeat of last week, and that is the sell and defend model. I don't know how else to do it, especially with the USDA coming very close. You know, now we're getting close to that next report. Next week will be the end of the month. And the mercantile exchange is starting to get ready to reset and widen their price limits for grains. We're going to go from 25 cents a bushel in corn to 40 cents a bushel, with expanded limits of 60 cents a bushel. Soybeans will go from 70 cents to $1 a bushel, with expanded limits to $1.50. Wheat doesn't get hit so badly, because it just goes from 40 to 45 with expanded limits of 70. But these are big volatile times. The option volatility made a massive move this week. So be ready for when they sell. They'll sell big, I suspect.
Are you worried at all about the expiration of the May contracts?
No, because the way the May options went off today and the bull spread came back around, you know, that was something we had talked about a couple weeks ago on Commodity Week. The bull spreads are really back in action. As long as we have that and we have a weak dollar, I still think we have opportunities to scale up sell.
You mentioned renewable diesel. Well, you mentioned some kind of green energy push. Renewable diesel, looks like there are plants scheduled to come on. I saw Phillips 66 out of Iowa, a couple of other places too, firms that is, that are really making this push. This looks like it could be something that's real.
This seems like ethanol 10 or 15 years ago, because you're right, Loves and Cargill is putting in a plant in Hastings, Nebraska, and we also just got word that there's going to be a new conversion, or maybe even a new plant in Louisiana. You know, the heart of the oil and gas industry, probably near Shreveport, would be my guess.
What about livestock? Anything?
Well, cattle on feed report should be dialed in, because the corn has just pummeled the feeder cattle market. I actually put out a note last night to start looking at buying the feeder cattle, walking gingerly, starting with calls, but looking at futures after cattle on feed. We're expecting huge placements of almost 135% on the report. I would be looking just as closely at the marketings, because it's a very low bar, 101% on marketing. So hoping the big feeder placements are well offset with the marketing's number, especially given beef supplies down 4% versus last year and pork supplies down 27%. So that market is very well balanced with the price action we've seen this past week, if you ask me, Todd.
Before I let you go, anything either on the outside markets or wheat?
Yeah, Todd, I tell you, the dollar continues to support us and give us a tailwind, and that's the number one factor in the outside markets, because that's going to tell us, I think, the tale of whether the trade is turning against emerging markets because of COVID or because of a variety of other issues or not. So that dollar puts a low in. I take it very seriously.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo at GlobalComResearch.com. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Yesterday afternoon, we recorded Commodity Week with our panelists Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, and Merrill Crowley. It's up on our website already. For those of you who are listening to our home station, you'll hear that program this afternoon. Many of you will hear it over the weekend on these radio stations. And if not, you can always find it online at willag.org. That's Will Ag. .org. Commodity Week. It's our premier agricultural programming, looking at a week's worth of agricultural trade. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with a FarmDoc Daily article posted earlier in the week by Gary Schnitke and Company. They write that fertilizer prices have increased, of course, since the fall of 2020, and that the price increases will lead to rising fertilizer costs for farms, with the timing of the purchases impacting the level of fertilizer cost associated with this growing season, or 2021. Overall, they write, fertilizer cost increases are larger for corn than for soybeans, and say that history would suggest that fertilizer price increases will persist until corn and soybean prices decline. They go on to say that because the price of fertilizer for corn has increased relative to the price of fertilizer for soybeans, it's less likely that farmers will plant more corn because of the higher price. It's still not more profitable than soybeans. Now, in Washington, D.C. this week, the Senate Agriculture Committee quickly advanced the Growing Climate Solutions Act that happened yesterday morning via a voice vote. The committee approved the legislation, sending it on to the full Senate for consideration. Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow states, on Earth Day, our committee came together in a bipartisan way to pass the Growing Climate Solutions Act. Ranking Member John Boozman says the bill demonstrates what can be accomplished if we take a bipartisan approach to legislating. The bill creates a structure at the U.S. Department of Agriculture to help farmers and foresters scale up climate-oriented practices and benefit from emerging new sources of farm revenue. The bill was reintroduced on Tuesday with the support of 42 senators and over 70 agricultural and environmental organizations. Agriculture groups are supportive of the legislation. Growth Energy CEO Emily Score says the Growing Climate Solutions Act rightly rewards farmers for climate-smart practices and provides important guidelines for success. Staying in D.C., but moving to the White House, where this week an announcement was made of the formation of the Interagency Working Group to address worsening drought conditions in the West and ongoing water shortages. The working group will be co-chaired by the Departments of the Interior and Agriculture. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack said, with our interagency working group, we will collaborate with tribes, agricultural producers, landowners, and rural communities to build regional resilience to drought. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland says, we're committed to using every resource available to accomplish this goal. The working group will work to identify immediate financial and technical assistance for impacted irrigators and tribes, development of longer-term measures to respond to climate change, and build more resilient communities and protect the natural environment will also be a priority. And finally today, this tidbit related to ethanol, relatively speaking, electric car sales are up 81%. Sales growth of both electric and hybrid vehicles outpaced overall market performance in the first quarter of 2021. Electric vehicles, automobiles featuring large battery packs and electric motors in the propulsion system, accounted for 7.8% of the total U.S. market, up from 4.8% in the first quarter of 2021. Cox Automotive and Kelley Blue Book released the data that finds electrified vehicle sales growth of 81% far outpaced industry growth. Sales of electric vehicles, battery only, grew by 44.8% year over year, reaching nearly 100,000 sales in the quarter. That's a record. Sales of hybrid vehicles outpaced both the market and electric vehicles, doubling to more than 200,000 in the quarter. Hybrid sales are increasing more quickly as sales of hybrid and plug-in hybrid vehicles jumped by 106% in the first quarter of the year. The overall automotive market increased by 11.4% for the quarter. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You know, soybean farmers are getting pretty excited about the possibility of new biofuels demand. It's called renewable diesel and differs from soy diesel in several key ways. Crude oil refineries around the globe are actively building out the capacity to make renewable diesel to meet tightening carbon standards. The push is already on in the United States, says University of Illinois agricultural economist Scott Irwin.
It sure looks like we're going to add at least 2 billion gallons of renewable diesel capacity in the next 2 to 3 years, which is a giant amount of feedstock. But here's what people are missing, and this is the big question. How much of what we can now, what I would now call FAME biodiesel, which is the fatty acid methyl ester traditional biodiesel. Is this going to cannibalize?
This is because renewable diesel, when compared to soy diesel, is favored under current U.S. law as it relates to advanced biofuels.
The real big thing is renewable diesel, it gets much higher carbon credits in California. And so renewable diesel will definitely cannibalize quite a bit of the FAME biodiesel market.
Some analytical firms have suggested the rise of renewable diesel, despite it just coming into the main, has already capped soy diesel production. That being said, because it takes slightly more pounds of soybeans to make a gallon of renewable diesel, 7.8 pounds, than of soy diesel, 7.5 pounds, it will drive soybean demand higher, thinks Irwin.
It is the next version of the biofuels boom.
It's coming and already having an impact on oilseed markets around the globe, says Scott Irwin, even for the price of soybeans. However, he cautions it's not yet clear how many of the intended renewable diesel refineries on the books will be built. Eric Snodgrass now joins us on this Friday to take a look at the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet. Thank you, Eric, for taking the time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Let's start with the cold air from last week and through part of this week. How widespread? Did it do much damage? Did it slow stuff down? What was your assessment?
Well, my first assessment is it was a busted forecast, right? I mean, you look back to even stuff we were talking about at the end of March, and we had a lot of signals for a warm April, and it was certainly warm for the front half of it, but jet stream kind of got all stacked up in both the Pacific and the Atlantic, and that sent that colder air through. So I think what's important for us to discuss is that we were getting temperatures below freezing all the way down to the panhandles of Oklahoma, Texas, down into Arkansas, through Tennessee, Kentucky, even clipping northern Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia. And probably the most important one, especially for corn and soybean growers, is we even saw some damage in both North and South Carolina where the frost hit some of the crops there yesterday and early this morning. And, you know, while it's just very atypical, and those aren't, you know, big production areas, it's important because that's usually the first crop in and the first crop out. And good news is that the cold is east now and the jet stream's flowing again like it normally does. And that's going to change everything up for us as we look forward into the future.
Well, what happens next?
What happens next is we slowly regain some heat. But unfortunately, we got some precip that's going to move into the state of Illinois throughout the day today, but really this evening and into early tomorrow morning, spreading some showers over us. So kind of a crummy Saturday shaping up here, and it's going to put some moisture in the soil, but it's chasing us out of doing some field work to start the weekend. Then we buy a couple of days of warm conditions early next week, but the issue is that we got a system that's plowing through the Pacific Northwest this weekend, even brings some precip into California, Oregon, Washington. And by the way, those are places that are having near record dryness in April. And then that emerges in the Central Plains by the time we get to Monday. So we're going to be on the lookout probably next week, Wednesday, Thursday timeframe, for what could be a pretty potent system bringing in the risk for some severe weather into our area. And that's the problem. We're chasing folks out of the fields now with moisture rather than the cold.
You mentioned that it emerges into the Central Plains, but the folks in North Dakota are not likely to be very happy about that. I suppose some of the Canadian prairies as well. Do they not get rainfall?
Yeah, I think this is ultimately the issue, is that some places that desperately need this are not going to get it. In the Canadian prairie, southern Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and then back to Alberta, but then North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana. I mean, these are places that when you look down, you know, you've got incredibly dry soil, not just in the top few inches, but down about 3 feet or so. And the issue is here, if we don't start returning moisture soon, what's that seedbed going to look like as the crop goes in there? Because they're still waiting on their last frost. And by the way, they might see a little bit of the white stuff flying in the northern plains this weekend. And that's really a slap in the face after what they got earlier in the season with the warmth.
How much rainfall are you expecting this weekend? And I know it depends on the region of the Corn Belt. And then how much during the week?
Yeah, it's funny. The models have just decided to diverge in a big way. And I was just looking right here for Champagne just to show you the spread on this. The European model wants to give us 0.9 inches of rain through the next 7 days. the GFS 3.3. So depending on how much moisture you need, you should choose the GFS or the European model. But the point here is that we are looking probably at least at a getting over an inch of precipitation through the next week here in central Illinois. But it comes down to that distribution, like you said, and the farther west you go, there's going to be a lot of places that miss out on this this precipitation.
What does the May forecast look like?
Well, it's been looking mild. If there's a place that sticks around with some cooler weather, it appears to be Montana north into the Canadian prairie. They seem to just not be able to shake the cooler weather. But there's some pretty good indications that we'll have a couple of brief shots of cooler air like we normally get behind, you know, a system like the one that's coming through next week. But it's not sending us into the deep cold like we just experienced. And so I think we're going to really start to warm things up and building some of that heat into the ground, get those early GDUs. And so it's going to be a matter of finding the window and going after it quickly and being prepared to go quickly when they open up between these storm systems.
Now turn to your driving force at the CME Group in Chicago, at least for corn. That's dry conditions and some trouble in South America.
Yeah, so when we think about South America, I think the problem is going to be in southern Mato Grosso do Sul. So that's Mato Grosso of the south of that, and then getting into Paraná and Rio Grande do Sul. So that would we would call that southern Brazil, and that's about probably 40% of Brazil's safrinha crop. And the issue down there is that there's places in Paraná that have not received rainfall in April. And this is a time period where we're going toward pollination, even though the crop is late. And the issue is that the longer range forecasts, at best, the wettest forecast I saw for South America, that part of South America, is to get about 50% of normal rainfall through the month of May. So we're concerned about the quality of the crop that's going to come out of southern Brazil and the safrinha crop. And just one last reminder, the monsoon is winding down now and usually shuts off pretty quickly here as we get into the month of May. So we'll have to see how this crop comes out of South America, this second crop here.
Any other concerns before I let you go?
No, I think those are the main things to be discussing. I'll say one thing about China. It appears as though the start of their growing season is looking good. I don't see any major soil moisture issues in the Manchurian Plain or the North China Plain. And the longer range forecast is favorable for that area as well. But it seems as though market forces, mainly both supply and demand, are making that a non-factor in changing the market behavior.
Can I ask, and I suspect you probably know, North China Plain is the northeast portion of China. That's Corn Belt. And Manchurian Plain is south central to the west, I think, yeah. But maybe not.
Yeah.
And that's soybean growing region, right?
Well, yeah, it's a bunch of like 1 acre farms through the whole area. So the North China Plain, what you need to think about for these two growing areas is find Beijing, go to the west of it, then go to the north of it and get north of the Korean Peninsula. That's where that whole region I just described is. And it's large, but it's very fragmented. Lots and lots and I mean, not joking, millions of small farms.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and joined us here in the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.